This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good, Earl. We made it to Friday, and the weather's going to be not too miserable this weekend.
Hey, Calvin. You're the guy. A couple months ago, you were, it's 50. It's what? Now 30. I guess it depends on what time of the year, right?
Yeah. It's all relative.
It really is, man. 30 sounds balmy, right?
Yeah. I mean, after the frigidness of the start of the week, anything's going to feel nice.
You know, they scare you.
It's zero outside still today, right now.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so you're just talking on the come here. You don't know. And it's true. 25 degrees feels warm after zero. But, you know, just think backwards in time. 25 degrees in October would be a startlingly cold day.
Well,
so this is winter.
So by now, that guy whose voice you just heard is my co-host, Sandy Williams. Good morning to you, Sandy. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. I haven't ventured outside, actually, but I've looked out there. I can tell it's cold. My dog reported in, said it was really cold out there.
So you can look out and tell that it looks cold. I mean, the sun has been nice and shining, and it didn't look cold.
Well, you know, the coldest days don't involve clouds. You know, clouds, right, are, I think, have a warming effect. So, you know, when it's super cold out, the sun is bright.
Sky is blue,
Yeah, it looks like you want to go outside until you do.
So let me ask you, Sandy, you know, last year, how soon we forget, last winter, we had very few sub-zero days.
We had very few freezing days. I have this ice rink, and so as an ice rink steward, that's a different vantage point. I looked at the thermometer all the time and tried to determine when it was going to just stay below freezing for enough time to pour down an ice rink and have it freeze. And it, other than a period in December when we had snow and very cold weather last year, it wasn't cold at all during the winter. So we didn't have any days like this.
No, man, we've kind of been spoiled, right?
Yeah, you know, the weather, we were talking about this, but, you know, this polar vortex thing. Okay, but I did because I'm so interested in the weather, I decided to do a little bit of a study of what is this all about? And then I began to try to explain to myself. And it turns out that there's this polar region at the top of the Earth. And if you picture it as a toupee, okay, and it's Howard Cosell's toupee, and it sits up on the top of your head, up on the top of the Earth, like the top of your head. And then sometimes it slides down over your left eye. It's embarrassing. It's also cold. But it's where it slides down that you suddenly have this much colder than normal weather. And so that's what's happened. The polar vortex is when this polar toupee slips down and extends down further in the United States than normal. Sometimes it slips down someplace over Siberia. Now today it's over the United States. You know, our latitude is the same as Milan, Italy. Milwaukee and Milan are right on the same latitude. Milan's climate is much warmer than ours. And the northern part of the United States, its latitude would put it well south of places like London You know, which is way north. London is up almost the equivalent of the Arctic. Well, not the Arctic Circle, but it's well north in Canada, much further north than any of the large cities of Canada. And it's all because of the weather streams in the Atlantic, which are being threatened by global warming. You know, it could be one of the fatalities of the global warming could be the Gulf Stream. And if the Gulf Stream dies, then the warm weather in England goes the way of the dodo bird.
So Sandy, you mentioned Howard Cosell's toupee.
Yeah.
Now, how many? You know, I'm just trying to envision. You know, I would have never even thought about Howard Cosell, let alone his toupee. But I'm envisioning Howard Cosell's toupee, and now I can see it. But I never
slipping
I never
down even, over his left eye.
No, but I never even thought about him having a toupee.
It wasn't a very good one. You'd think a guy that made the money that Howard Cosell had could have figured out a way to get a toupee that didn't tell everyone in the world that, hey, I'm actually wearing a toupee.
Yeah, well, there were a lot of guys wearing toupees back then. And, you know, today is a different world. Guys don't wear toupees as much. They accept it. Balding is accepted, and in many arenas, you know, how do I say this without?
Well, if people shave their head. I mean, it's like it's an embrace. It's like, hey, right. I'm losing a little hair. Let's get rid of all of it. It's got a certain machismo going for it.
Well, you know, back in those days, they would keep the hair on the side, right, and all around, not on the top, but they didn't let go very easily, and decide that okay, we're gonna go.
Well,
all
we
the
have
way.
A president. We have a sitting president today who obviously spends a great deal of time in front of the mirror fashioning his hair so that maybe it's not a toupee necessarily, but it's the configuration of the hair is designed to cover up this balding thing.
Yeah, well, you know, he's very proud of his locks. And,
I just imagine the duration of time in the morning that is spent fashioning your hair in such an elaborate way, it says something. You know?
Yeah. Well, you know, he. Anyway. So, Sandy, a lot to talk about this morning. We're going to be joined in the 9 o'clock hour by Miss Candy Stroud, and she wrote a book about former President Jimmy Carter and his wife back when he first decided to run and when he was the governor of Arkansas. And
he was the governor,
governor
of Georgia.
Why am I?
Yeah. Well, you're in Bill Clinton's. You're thinking Bill Clinton. You got,
hey, Arkansas, Georgia,
they all talk funny.
We're in the north, so. But anyway, so we're going to have a great conversation with her. But in the meantime, Sandy, a lot to talk about. You wanted to talk about, you know, former President McKinley.
Well, you know, I've been struck by the fact that the sitting president, the incoming president, has talked, you know, remarkably much. He doesn't talk much about history at all, but he's suddenly begun to embrace this President McKinley, who is not someone we've studied much in our history books. And he's someone who was presiding over the United States at the end of the 19th century. So from the period of 1897 on, we had this President McKinley. His vice president was Theodore Roosevelt. And McKinley's period of presidency was at the tail end of something that was called the Gilded Age, the Golden Age. Many people have converted that quote into. But the Gilded Age was actually a term of a twist of words that Mark Twain used. He and another guy collaborated on a novel in 1873 called the Gilded Age. And what they were referring to was America at the time. And it was a cultural statement about how America looked like it was golden. You know, something that's gilded is covered in gold, but it's not gold, okay? It's just got essentially a gold paint on it. And the term was designed to mean that here America looked like it was in a golden age. There was lots of prosperity. It was the period of Andrew Carnegie and U.S. Steel. It was the period of John D. Rockefeller and Standard Oil. It was the period of the amassing of great wealth by people who today would be billionaires. Today, in that era, they were mega millionaires. And those people had great influence in government. But it was also a period of great urban poverty. The industrial age was swept in with all of this development of big investments in the United States. But the wealth was not shared. And Mark Twain's term, the Gilded Age, meant, look, this thing looks golden, but when you scratch it, the gold disappears. And what you have underneath it is a lot of very poor people who are suffering in this period of great wealth being amassed by the very wealthy. And then it was Teddy Roosevelt who assumed the presidency when McKinley was assassinated at the World Expo in Buffalo, New York in 1901. And Teddy Roosevelt realized the plight of these people and became the populist president representing Tom, Dick, and Mary. And he started the antitrust actions against John D. Rockefeller. And he basically turned the guns of the people, the focus of politics, became anti all these terribly wealthy people. So it could be very foretelling, because Donald Trump apparently wants to claim that he's restarting this golden age of America. It also was the last period of imperialism. It was under McKinley that the United States had its last international adventures in terms of taking over other countries, other places. And we had the Spanish-American War, which was ginned up by the then influence-peddling William Randolph Hearst yellow journalist newspaper. So it wasn't social media back then. It was the yellow journalism of William Randolph Hearst, who ginned up a jingoistic period of great fervor, patriotic fervor, which turned into the United States adventure to initiate a war that gave us the Philippines, Cuba, and the whole Spanish-American War, which was the last vestige of American imperialism. And it's this president today who is now again beginning to talk in imperialistic way. So it's interesting that he points at William McKinley. It's interesting that he wants to sort of idolize him, and yet it was McKinley who brought down the Gilded Age. Actually, he presided at its tail end, and it was at its most its periods of greatest abuse.
855-752-4842. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's my co-host Sandy Williams and you. We're going to talk a little bit more about William McKinley, the Gilded Age, and the comparison with where we might be today with President Donald Trump.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host Sandy. And Sandy, we're going to do something a little bit different today. What we're going to do is we're going to let people kind of guess what the music
Yeah. Oh, they'll never guess this one.
Well, not the song, not the song, but
No, I mean, there's no theme. This music is what the Apple Music told me was stuff that I play frequently because I like it. So what you're getting dished up today is an assortment of Williams, music that Sandy Williams likes.
So what we're going to do henceforward is we're going to, before you divulge what the reason is for the music, we'll give people a chance to kind of guess during the show. So you were talking about William McKinley in the Gilded Age and the fact that it was a time when people in this nation and the wealth was not shared. And to make the comparison, Sandy, could only lead to the fact that we could be headed back to those kinds of times now.
Well, I think we're there. I mean, I think the comparison being made by the incoming president is ironic because we clearly are in a situation where it is gilded. You know, the prosperity that we can talk about, the stock market going soaring, the unemployment rate being quite low, all of that looks like we're in a golden period. But when you scratch the surface and you look at how Tom, Dick, and Mary are living and how wealth is being shared, and instead of being trending in the direction of the sharing of more wealth, we have the consolidation of wealth in the hands of a very few, all of that is remarkably like the historical period from 1875 to 1900, which was this gilded period, the golden age. You know, I think Donald Trump thinks that what they're talking about is a golden age, but it was the gilded age. And it was this age when the great wealth was being amassed by those who assembled great wealth, and the people on whose back they were assembling that wealth were not sharing in it and weren't living very well. And it fostered a progressive period that began about 1900. In Wisconsin, we had a very powerful progressive response to that situation. It was the situation which history books have been more likely to call the period of the robber barons. And it was these robber barons, J.D. Rockefeller, Andrew Carnegie, and others who amassed great wealth. And so I think the irony is there to be seen, discussed. And the fact is that what we're talking about today is a recreation of this period at the end of the Golden Age or the Gilded Age in the late 19th century that ended up with this imperialist war, the Spanish-American War, which all of our history books have always told us actually was sort of the last vestige of American imperialism. You know, America was watching the rest of the world colonialize the world, and we decided, hey, maybe we ought to get a little bit of that action ourselves. And so, you know, we reached out to the Philippines. You know, we should recognize the Philippines was a territory of the United States until we liberated it in the 1950s.
So, Sandy, that's the historic perspective of what transpired. Well, today we see that happening before our eyes. And so how do the American people, the average American person, seems to be unable to turn this around?
Well, in that period in history, you know, I've talked about how I think what we need is to come onto the scene as a charismatic leader, someone who can lead the people and help them understand what's going on, what's wrong, and lead them in a different direction. And the fact is that McKinley's vice president, who ascended to the presidency when McKinley was shot at the Pan American Expo in Buffalo, the person who ascended the presidency was Teddy Roosevelt, who was just such a charismatic figure. And it was Teddy Roosevelt, whereas he came from a sort of old established wealth in the East, he understood what was happening with all this kind of the nouveau riche robber barons. And he turned the American political focus on them. Instead of giving them more power, he began to attack them. And the American public picked up that cudgel.
Well, you know, Sandy, I don't see the next Teddy Roosevelt on the horizon. And even with that, having been said, Sandy, what we see taking place, it did not just happen. You know, it's been happening. It's been happening for some time. And the latest guy is the guy who I think is pushing it over the top. The difference in the wealth in this nation and the people who benefited didn't just start doing it. It's been going on with Democrats and Republicans both in office.
Well, it's been happening over the last several decades, no question about it, which is much the same as what was happening in the late 1800s. The assemblage of wealth is a little more rapid today than it was then because the capacity to make money rapidly has accelerated in the current style of American business, particularly with respect to the kind of business that doesn't involve, the business of high tech is a place where money can be assembled very rapidly.
You know, Sandy,
the Diaz at the inauguration was just the same picture as would have happened at McKinley's.
Well,
different faces.
It's not coincidental that this amassing of wealth has occurred at the same time that the American people have gone into the doldrums and have been losing their shirts. It's not a coincidence. 855-752-4842. It's Friday. That means Friday's my co-host Sandy Williams and you. 855-752-4842. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's my co-host, Sandy Williams. And Sandy, this is what's in your head, huh?
Yeah, Ricky Lee Jones. You know, I figured out when Apple gives me back the list of things that I listen to a lot, I really like bass lines. I like bass guitar. Almost everything I had has a strong bass guitar. So that's what I got running in my head.
All right.
Bass thoughts.
So if you're just joining us, we were talking about William McKinley and the Gilded Times. And Sandy was clearly stating that he thinks that's kind of where we're kind of headed now. You can speak
well,
for yourself.
Well, ironically, we have a president who's harking back to that, calling that the great times, where he's going to return us to the golden age and pointing at the time of William McKinley. And if you're a historian and you look at the time of William McKinley, you look at it at a time of great economic disparity, the accumulation of great wealth to some extent at the expense of those who were the workers on whom that great wealth was assembled, the backs of whom. And it led directly to a progressive period in not only in Wisconsin, but a progressive period in the United States, the leader of it initially being Teddy Roosevelt, who was the much more famous president. He's the president whose head is configured at Mount Rushmore. It's not William McKinley.
Yeah, well,
and we do have a president today who is periodically has expressed his desire to get himself carved into the rock at Mount Rushmore. So I think he should go back to history and analyze it a little more carefully and realize that letting people assemble great wealth on your watch might not be the ticket to history giving you great accolades.
Well, let's do this, Sam. Let's go through the phone lines. Let's go to Kenny from Brown Deer. Good morning to you, Kenny. Thank you very much for the call.
Good morning, guys. I started listening to your show. I drive to work. I have kind of a long commute. I started listening to your show a couple months ago before the election and back and forth. And I changed channels. I listened to TMJ, ISN, and you guys. And Sandy, you seem like a very intelligent, smart guy. Not that you're not, Earl, but a couple things. Let me. I'm driving to work. Okay. What is the definition of rich? Am I rich? Are you rich? What does rich mean? And when you say the rich should pay their fair share, what is that, Sandy? You're an economist, an attorney. What percentage of wealth should someone pay to be fair?
Well, I think first of all, we should realize that to the extent we assemble wealth, we do it because of the economy and the country in which we live. It's the geopolitical reality in which we live that allows us to assemble our wealth. And what is a fair share? Well, I guess it has to do with equity. If Tom, Dick, and Mary, when they get their paycheck, have automatically withdrawn from their paycheck a 24% tax, that is the rate at which they are expected to pay a tax based on the amount of income they have, then 24% of, let's say, the median income of $75,000, constitutes, you know, the average tax on the median income today in this country is about $16,000 or $18,000 a year. So, maybe the rich ought to pay that same percentage, but the fact is that the average percentage rate of tax paid by the very wealthy gets down into the teens, 14-15%, because of the way they pay taxes and the nature of the taxes on the way they assemble their wealth. And so I just think that what we're talking about is equity. If sauce for the goose needs to be sauce for the gander. And, you know, to some extent, a flat tax would be fine if there was a large exemption at the bottom of the flat tax. So if the first $50,000 you earned bore a very low tax and maybe all you paid is FICA, and if the income above 50 paid a flat tax of 24% or 25%, maybe that would be okay. But the wealthy wouldn't like it because, you know what, today they aren't paying 25% in reality, even though the tax code would suggest they are.
Yeah, Sandy, I have to say, and the question that Ken...
Well, he asked a good question because, you know, people come up with the proposition that the top 5% of the American income earners pay, let's say, I don't have the number directly at hand, 40% of the income tax paid by Americans, or 50%. Well, the fact is that top 5% earns 50% of the income earned. You know, they're earning that percentage of the income, and the amount of income they earn that is above the, you know, that is disposable income, above the income that they need to live day to day, is much greater. Okay, the problem with the tax paid by Tom, Dick, and Mary is it comes out of a very tight budget. The taxes paid by the very wealthy don't come out of a tight budget at all. That the last part of that tax is easily paid. Maybe they pay it begrudgingly, but it's paid easily.
So the problem, so when you talk about wealth, and there's a small percentage of people in this nation who are wealthy, It's not the majority. And so that small percentage of the people who are wealthy are above the citizenry of this nation. And so what they do and the lives they live aren't anywhere near the lives that the majority of the American people live. And so the thought process of what is wealth is different for the people who are struggling every day to make it. They don't have any concept of what wealth is. Wealth to them is being able to have my rent paid without a struggle, being able to have food in the house, being able to have transportation. And I think we get caught up in this thing about, well, the wealthy and where they are, as if the rest of the people don't count.
Well, I think that Kenny asks a really good question, though,
I'm not saying he didn't.
And I think that when you get down and analyze it, you know, people who earn $200,000 a year are wealthy as compared to a family that earns $75,000 a year. But the family that earns $200,000 a year is still scratching, trying to make their budget. Still, you know, it's still difficult for them to pay taxes. But the family that earns $800,000 a year should have no problem whatsoever paying their taxes. The amount of income they have, which is truly disposable, is much, much greater. Hey, so the idea behind the progressive income tax is that as our income gets much, much greater, are the ease with which we meet our expenses becomes much more.
I get it, but Sandy, that's still a percentage of the American people who own $200,000 and more is a very small percentage of who the American people are. So when we speak from that perspective, we totally see it through a different prism. And so
I'm just saying that the notion that the wealthy shouldn't pay a significant tax begs the question of this ease of payment of taxation, because the notion that people that earn the median family that earns $78,000 a year ought to be paying a substantial tax out of their $78,000 a year begs the question of just how terribly difficult it is for them to bear the expense of that tax as compared to the family that earns materially more. And you know, all of those people on the dais at the inauguration who have billions of dollars and earn millions of dollars a year can pay their taxes painlessly.
So Sandy,
but they're the ones fighting to make sure the taxes are low. And they're the ones that are fighting to get rid of programs so that taxes can be reduced.
So we see that and we know that. And so that group of people are controlling things. That group of people say, we don't want any additional IRS agents. And they say that and they get it done because they have a man like Donald Trump who comes in and says, I know, I'm going to take care of that. And so we're not going to have those IRS agents. So you'll keep living your life the way you do. But then how then, again, does the majority of the American people, as they watch this, they can't revel in the fact that there's a segment of the population that lives so well. I don't get anything out of seeing the wealthy live well, and I'm struggling to get to work every day. I want, as an American citizen, is a fair opportunity, which is what our nation supposedly promises, which separates us from other nations.
The problem we have societally is that America has long been a place that idolizes the very wealthy and vicariously is thrilled by their great success. It takes a leader like Teddy Roosevelt for us to recognize that about ourselves and to realize that we need to take on this question of income disparity. We shouldn't worship at that throne. We should actually try to take the steps to make sure that the economy works for those who work in the economy.
If I'm idolizing somebody who lives well and I'm struggling and I'm moving from day to day and trying to keep a roof over my head, there's something wrong with the way I'm approaching things.
Well, exactly. And so we, you know, what we need to do is we need to get leaders who help people identify what's actually going wrong and what actually could go right. I mean, Bernie Sanders did a good job, I thought, of analyzing the inaugural speech by the incoming president and pointing out that he didn't once talk about the problems that Tom, Dick, and Mary have, like healthcare and the broken healthcare system, like the cost of education, like the cost of daycare, like the shortage of housing that is causing Americans to pay too big a percentage of their disposable income to put a roof over their head. There's still no talk about that. You know, we're looking at and talking about shiny objects like cutting the fat out of our government as if that is the problem that is causing the shortage of housing and the broken healthcare system, the cost of education, the lack of child daycare availability and its great expense. All of those things are the things that Tom, Dick, and Mary ought to be insisting that they hear about, but that's not the menu that's being served up to them.
Well, here's a prime example, a text message by James. 10% of the highest wage earners pay 80% of the taxes. Where he got that from, I don't know, but I'm sure he's an average guy. He believes that.
Well, but the fact is that they do pay a very high percentage.
Yeah, but not 80%.
But like I said, the reason they do is you can't get blood from a stone. You can't expect the economy as it is currently established, with a shrinking middle class, with a median family that has two breadwinners that earn $76,000 a year, that lives paycheck to paycheck, cannot be the source of additional taxes.
All right, 855-752-4842. Guys, hang on the phone lines. We'll come to you. 855-752-4842. It's Friday. That means Friday's my co-host, Sandy Williams, and you on the Earl Ingram Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. Text us that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy, the music.
Just stuff I like. You gave me a license to pick music, and usually I decide on a theme. Today's theme is it's what I like to listen to.
All right, let's go to the phone lines. Let's go to Mary from Tulsa. Good morning to you, Mary. You say what?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. In my never-ending optimism and looking for, you know, the Democratic advocates that are out there, I was reminded of the Patriotic Millionaires, which Earl has brought to my attention, and I did join their friend's newsletter. And so the Patriotic Millionaires, they're voicing an opinion on, you know, what our new administration, the track that it's taking us on, along with 3,000 of their global elites. And it is not supportive of our administration. And so they have a letter campaign out called We Must Draw the Line. And I'd just like to read one sentence out of that letter, and then I would encourage people to take a look at this. It's pretty impressive. The letter states, wealth is no longer simply about worth. It is about control. If you are elected leaders, our elected leaders continue to neglect the crisis of wealth extremism, the fractured foundations of our hard-won democracies will face further harm. So,
hey, Mary, thank you very much for that. Sandy, you want to respond to that?
Well, absolutely. You know, in fact, the station is premised on that view taken by these millionaires who actually care about the country and care about creating a sustainable economy. And that is the danger of what's happening right now, is that we've got the people who are nominally in charge of this country, or maybe not nominally, but actually in charge, are these terribly wealthy people who seem to be driven by the kinds of public policies that help the very wealthy amass even more wealth. And, you know, the only thing that's talked about talked about as if it will provide some promise to Tom, Dick, and Mary is the tariff policy. And the reason stated for the tariff policy is that it's going to create lots of jobs in this country. Well, we shall see about that. We shall see. And that's going to come at a great deal of near-term pain, because it is going to raise prices on everything, and it's going to essentially reduce the average standard of living of everybody based on the greater expense of everything.
Let's go to Gary from Sussex. Good morning to you, Gary. You say what?
Well, I want to respond to what Sandy said earlier. Trump was talking about the golden ages, not the gilded ages. Because it's, you know, the golden age is a time of prosperity and peace and good productivity and political stability. And that's what he's talking about.
Well, Gary, but tell me this. Why does he talk about the golden age and President McKinley in the same breath? He's harking back to President McKinley. President McKinley is known as the president who was the last imperialist president and was the last one to basically be in charge of this country at the end of its golden age. So I think it's ironic. I'm not suggesting that Donald Trump's a student of history and actually knows what he's talking about here. I'm just saying it's ironic that he's chosen this language and this president, President McKinley, as the people, as the time and the person to talk about, because that time was a very troubled time.
Well, I'm just using the terms that he used. He didn't say gilded, he just said golden.
All right, Gary, yeah. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Wisco Paul. Good morning to you, Wisco Paul. You say what?
Good morning. Nice day in beautiful Madison, Wisconsin today. I don't have a problem with wealthy people, rich people, whatever you want to call them. I just want them to pay their fair share. So we have safety nets for people that need them. Some people might get down, they need safety nets. And I want to keep Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and things like that. And somebody's got to pay for the defense of the country. You can't run aircraft carriers all around the world and expect the middle class to pay for all this stuff. So that's all I'm saying here is they just need to pay their fair share.
Hey, Wisco Paul, thank you very much for the call. You know, I guess, Sandy, and where we are with all of this is, depending on where you are, where you are on this scale. You know, I know people who probably make $40,000 a year, and to them, they don't know any better. They live their lives in that reality, and they don't consider themselves to be poor. That this is just the way things are. And so these things are predicated on where you are on that scale. If, you know, there are people who own, I was looking at Michael Jordan the other day, they got, $500,000, what do you call those ships, whatever they are.
Yachts.
And then,
well, they don't, half a billion dollar yachts.
And yeah. Okay, well, a person who doesn't see that, he can't even envision that kind of life.
So well, my point is that if we have a big defense department to protect us from losing what we have, the people who have a lot have a greater stake in protecting it than the people who don't.
Hey guys, I'm going to ask you guys to, you know, we've got a guest on at the top of the hour, Miss Candy Stroud. We're going to pick this up after our guests. So 855-752-4842. Up next, Candy Stroud, and we're going to talk about her book and her knowing Joe Biden next on the Early English.
the national news cycle never stops. But it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.